Welcome to another episode of Schneps Connects. Today I'm talking about something near and dear to my heart, which is the Local Journalism Sustainability Act. It's known as the LJSA. The act is designed to address the challenges facing local journalism, such as the decline in advertising and really the rise of many of these large digital platforms. And it really incentivized the support coming from both readers and advertisers. By providing financial incentives, the Local Journalism Sustainability Act aims to bolster the economic viability of local news outlets and ensure that communities have access to reliable and independent journalism throughout the state of New York. I'm thrilled to have today's guest, Libby Post, to discuss this act. She's the dynamic president and CEO of Progressive Public Affairs and Government Relations, which is a subsidiary of Communications Services. Armed with a master's in political communications, Libby established Communication Services back in 1984. And since then, she's been a driving force in providing strategic communication advice, marketing, and advocacy campaign management to a wide array of nonprofit organizations, advocacy groups, public libraries, and political candidates. Progressive Public Affairs and Government Relations, under her leadership, has spearheaded campaigns for notable organizations such as the New York State Animal Protection Federation, the Humane Society of the United States, the Animal Welfare Institute, Cruelty Free International, and the Albany Newspaper Guild. Libby, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
It's lovely to be with you, Josh. Thank you.
I think everybody kind of understands that journalism in general is really in threat. There's been, you know, a huge evolution that's taken place, and maybe more so now than ever with artificial intelligence. So, you know, this really was something that was hard fought for on the state level. There was something in the national bills that didn't go anywhere, but this was New York State. It was up against pretty long odds, I would say. But thanks to your tireless efforts and the efforts of a lot of other groups and individuals, it passed. It was a part of the state budget. So, you know, I just want to give you kudos. It's definitely deserved. And I guess, you know, would love for you to share from your perspective, you know, why the Local Journalism Sustainability Act was so important.
Well, the act is so important because it's about democracy. We know that when there is local journalism, there's less graft, there's less corruption, there's less self-dealing, and there's more community engagement, especially going into, you know, this November, the presidential election year. So, you know, we need to have vibrant local coverage. And the story I like to tell was up in Watertown in the North Country, there was no local newspaper because of the economics of it. The local paper there had to close its doors and nobody was watching. And so the mayor and a city council member came to fisticuffs on the city council floor. And nobody really knew that this happened because nobody was there. I found out about it because I was working with a group up there and they told me about it. And so I used that story to illustrate the need, right, to make sure that that kind of story got covered. And now it's Johnson Newspapers, they were able to reopen a weekly up there and things have really gotten better. Things have calmed down. The other part of it that I found fascinating was that municipal lenders look to see if there are local newspapers and local journalism watching what's going on in local government. And when there's not, the cost to bond, municipal bonding is higher when there's no local journalism. So there's a real impact to the taxpayers because of this.
Talk a little bit about how this bill came about and who kind of spearheaded it, because, you know, it was a big, big learning experience for me. And I want to thank you because I feel like you held my hand and really guided me along in terms of the education of, you know, how a bill even starts. So I would love for you maybe to share, you know, who really got the ball rolling and how that happened.
Well, we all remember the after-school special of how a bill becomes a law, right? You know, I'm showing my age, but, you know, there is a process. And so what happened was originally this concept was in Joe Biden's Build Back Better bill, the original infrastructure bill, and it didn't get passed and it wasn't part of the final product. And then in New York, there were conversations, and Brad Hoyleman in the Senate, who's down in New York City, and Carrie Warner in the Assembly, who's up here, she's out of Saratoga County, decided to work together to put together what we call the Local Journalism Sustainability Act. And it was a standalone piece of legislation, because you need to do that in order to build your base of support for a budget. It was a budget item, which was originally $100 million tax credit a year for 5 years, right? And that was pushing the envelope. And so we got a lot of people to sign on to the bill, not this past year, but the year before, to show massive bipartisan support. We had Republicans and Democrats on the actual bill. And then we knew that this had to be a budget item in the budget that just got passed on April 1st, or sort of close to that. And so we did the lobbying. You came up. We met with legislators. We met with legislative leadership. We were lobbying the entire time, advocating the entire time from January when session started until the budget was complete. And there was a group of organizations involved. This was an anomaly where the publishers and the union representing the journalists were working together, because they knew it was the best outcome for both of them, right?
Sure.
The union wants to maintain a workforce and keep their people employed, and the publisher wants a product, and they need the people in order to produce the product. And so the New York State Publishers Association, the Albany Newspaper Guild, and eventually all the guilds around the state got on board with this, as well as the AFL-CIO. The president of the AFL-CIO is a former guild member, and Mario Salenti is his name. And the AFL really, at the last minute, when, you know, things sort of shut down when the budget is being done in the last few days. You don't get in. You don't get into meetings. You have to be at a level that's beyond most of us in this arena. And the AFL-CIO, Mike Neidl from the AFL, really did yeoman's work and worked very, very hard with people in both houses and the governor's office for there to be not a settlement, but an inclusion in the budget of the Local Journalism Sustainability Act. It wasn't as much as we wanted, but it's a foot in the door. It's $30 million a year for 3 years. If it's oversubscribed, which I think it will be, right, then we'll go back, or they'll go back and say, look, we really need a larger tax credit, and see what can be done in the next few years.
Well, I have to give a tremendous amount of thanks and credit to both Hoyleman and Werner and, you know, the governor for really, you know, making sure that this, you know, passed. You know, Janineras, I think there's a lot of people to thank, but, you know, it goes to show that they really have to get behind the bill to make it move forward, let alone pass it. And it really takes a group effort to make that possible. I had been to Albany in the past, but I never had been really there to advocate on behalf of anything. So it was an impressive experience, I have to say. And then also seeing all the other groups that advocate, you know, in Albany.
I mean, honestly, getting publishers and journalists to do advocacy was not the easiest task in the world.
Yeah.
Because the journalists are like, no, we can't do that. That's not what we do. You know, we have to remain impartial. And the publishers are like, yeah, we don't do that either, for whatever reason. You know, they need to look like they're not going to have anybody in their pocket, or they're not going to be in anybody's pocket. And so it was a difficult thing, but the Publishers Association, the New York Press Association, the Guild, we all, you know, pulled together, and the AFL-CIO, the other, you know, the larger labor, we all pulled together. CWA was also instrumental in this. They're the parents' union for the Guild, and people pulled together, and it happens in the ninth hour or the 11th hour, you know, right before things are going to get finalized. They were able to get the language in, and everybody agreed to it. It was not an easy negotiation, because there were some folks who, A, were not in favor of it, but B, didn't want some media outlets to get it and wanted other media outlets to get it. And, you know, those will remain nameless, but it was the political tug of war, is the best way to put it.
And I guess for listeners to understand, the way that the money is going to be utilized is, first of all, there's a limit to how much each organization can get.
Right.
So there's a cap. And then secondly, it only can be used for employment of journalists. I mean, it can't be used you know, discretionarily, like for anything that someone wants, it has to be specifically geared towards the salary of journalists. But I don't know, I still believe that there's more to hash out in terms of the specifics
I think
before the bill actually takes effect, right, which would be what, January of 25?
No, it's in the budget. So it would, the governor signed the budget April 3rd, 4th, 5th, whenever she signed it, that it was about a week late. So it's in the budget. Now it's about putting the process and the policies in place to make it actually happen. So what it is that news organizations, and it's newspapers mostly, and websites, and I'm not sure whether or not broadcast ended up being in the final product or not. But anyway, be that as it may, the publisher can apply for a tax credit on the first 50% of the first $50,000 of a journalist's salary, right? So it's a tax credit on that first $25,000 of a journalist's salary. And they have to file, and they have to do quarterly filings, and they have to show the paperwork, and they have to show that they're a real media organization. They're not a pink slime website, mm-hmm. you know, that's really just a tool, a 527 tool of some political organization, regardless of which one it is. And so, you know, they have to show that they have liability insurance and malpractice insurance and all of that sort of stuff as well. And they do the paperwork and they do the filings, and then they'll get the tax credit back.
So when do you think publishers will be able to actually start taking advantage of it? Will it be retroactive, or do these rules have to be put in place before it will actually, you know, be the starting line?
That's a really good question. And I do not know the absolute answer to that, but I can tell you from the other work that I have done when they're with budget stuff, it takes a year. You know, who knows if it's going to take a year for this, but you know, you mentioned before, I represent the New York State Animal Protection Federation, which is for all the shelters in the state, and I run the organization. And when we got our first $5 million for the Companion Animal Capital Fund, which helps with capital projects, it took a year, right? Mm. A full year, RFP process, all of that stuff for people to get any kind of funding. Now it's a little more streamlined. So I think once it's done, once the process is put in place for the tax credit once, and they do other tax credits. So it's not like this is brand new, right? There's the TV and motion picture tax credit. I think there's a tax credit for video game people. And so they know how to do it. They just need to put it in place.
So you've obviously done a lot of lobbying, and you continue to do it. That's what you do. How did this process differ from many of the other kind of lobbying efforts? I mean, it did pass the first time it really came before the state, which is, I would say, a very big success. But I mean, was it much different from other projects that you're involved in besides the topic?
No, I mean, you know, it's about the players. It's about the relationships that you have. It's about the people who champion this, the legislation or the budget proposal. And that's the way it is with every budget proposal, every budget item that's new and that needs to be put into the budget. I mean, you know, and so we had people, you know, reaching out to their local legislators. You came up, other people came up for that lobby day that we did, or that advocacy day that we did, and which was very successful. And we had lots of good meetings that day, and we made our case, and we got more people to sign on. And ultimately, you know, that's the process. You have relationships, you use those relationships, you tell people what you want, and you make it into a political plus for them to do it. I can tell you that ultimately, you know, your local legislators will herald this as something that they've delivered, right? Sure. Just like people have done with the infrastructure bill. They voted against it, right? But they take credit for it when the money comes home to roost. And, you know, the same thing happens with the Companion Animal Capital Fund. You know, the first year when the awards were made, there were legislators who couldn't get to their local shelter fast enough to get a picture taken with the shelter director and a dog. And so, you know, or a cat. And so, you know, that's just the way it goes. There's a process here. And, you know, it's really a lot of it is built on relationships. Who you know, who you can use as an ally, and who can help you move stuff forward.
Well, listen, I obviously love news. It's what I do every day, all day. I think hopefully people acknowledge that it's become critically important to have sources of news that you can rely on. And I think that that is going to become more and more important as people begin to use artificial intelligence
Absolutely.
On a greater scale, because they want to know that they have the option to go to sources and get information from those sources that they can rely on. And for us, that's really local news.
Right.
And yes, there'll always be new technologies coming out for people to find out things. But I think if you really want to have sources that you trust and rely on, there have to be newsrooms. And that's what probably is, you know, feeding the beast of AI is information and data. And that's what news organizations have. So, you know, I think that this money will be well used to produce more original content that people can rely on. Hopefully we'll create, you know, more jobs and opportunities, because right now a lot of news organizations need to figure out that transition to digital. What a lot of people don't understand is it's very difficult for news organizations to monetize
right
digital media.
Yeah.
And there's been a real, you know, some very public companies that have fallen from grace because the numbers just didn't add up for their businesses, and a lot of journalists lost their jobs. So, you know, hopefully this will help with that transition. And, you know, Libby, thank you for all the hard work you put into it.
This was a labor of love. You know, when I was a kid, I wanted to be the managing editor of the New York Times. So
there you go. That's a good
idea. I didn't get there. But, you know, I have a journalism degree from New Albany and, as you said, a political communications master's. And, you know, I think journalism is really important. I've been doing work with journalists for 40 years. And so it's, you know, it is the lifeblood of our local communities. And people need to be well paid, compensated for their work, valued for their work, and so that democracy can survive. Because we know when journalism dies, so does democracy.
Yeah. Listen, if you look at any like autocrat or any, you know, dictatorship, right, the first thing that they can take control of is the media.
That's because right.
Controlling the narrative is, you know, gets the public to believe things.
That's right. I mean, so we see it today.
We both talked a little bit about your other work and, you know, the advocacy that you do on behalf of animals. Is there any project that you're working on now that you can share or want to talk about?
Well, you know, the Federation, as I said, represents all the animal shelters in the state. And if you go to any of your local shelters on Long Island, they're full. Yesterday, we had our annual animal crimes conference. We had about around 200 people here in Albany from all over the state talking about animal crimes, how to make your case, all that sort of stuff. And we've been doing this for a number of years, and we're raising the importance of these crimes and dealing with these crimes with law enforcement, district attorney.
What would be an animal crime? Give me an example.
Animal cruelty, beating a dog to death, right? Starving an animal.
Hmm.
You know, all those kinds of things. Animal fighting.
That's yes. It. Yep.
So our shelters are bearing the brunt of the animal crime investigations, because it's not like a television that got stolen and you can put it on a shelf. You have to care for these animals. They're sure. Live evidence. And when I said this in a budget hearing, live evidence, people's jaws dropped and their eyes opened up. And I'm like, right, you can't put the dog on a shelf. You got to feed it. You got to take care of it. And so one of the things we're working on now is an animal crimes fund to help offset those costs, because it's getting more and more expensive to provide that care. And it's just expensive to provide care for homeless animals, period. And when they come from an animal cruelty situation, there's a lot of vet bills involved in that.
You know, it's interesting. They're doing their job on one side, which is making sure that people aren't cruel animals. But you're right. As they break, you know, up rings or operations, right, they then have all this influx of pets.
Right.
And what do they do with them? And they have to expand right. The services. Interesting.
Right. Yeah. And one of the other bills that we worked on this year, you know, this session was a little strange, but was adding animal fighting to the organized crime statute in the state of New York. So mm-hmm. As part of organized crime, because when there's animal fighting, there's usually guns, drugs, and there might very well be human trafficking involved as well. And so there's all kinds of things that we're working on. And I work really closely with the two lobbyists from the ASPCA and HSUS. They're on my board, or they're chair of my legislative committee. We work really closely together, and we've gotten a lot done in the 10 years that I've been doing this work.
Now, listen, you have a wide variety of clients, right? Everything from dogs and cats to journalists and publishers.
Right.
I love it. I love it. Libby, you're a great person. I'm so happy that I got to know you better. And, you know, I want to thank you for, you know, really teaching me and guiding me a lot over these last few months of advocacy. So thank you.
Well, it was my pleasure, Josh. It's great to meet you, and I want to keep the relationship going.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for your time.
All righty.
Take care.